to be able to be here today to give this Srimad Bhagavatam class, honored in all of your presence. We humbly beg from the senior devotees to bless us that we can share something from Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, we were invited today to share a little from Srimad Bhagavatam, most especially because today is the holy appearance day of Srila Radhanath Maharaj. So this is indeed a very honored blessing for us to be able to share something small from Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we will do what we probably do best, is share some things about Srila Radhanath Swami. So thank you very much. Haribol. And so I want to a little bit apologize to the brahmacharis and everyone in the room, because generally there are always two voices that we have going on all the time. And I'm sure for some of you, one of the voices, why is she speaking the Bhagavatam? Why isn't he speaking the Bhagavatam? So, our spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he was always very kind, and he always encouraged me to share. And so in the years of serving him, he always pushed me like that. You speak, you speak, you speak. And so although I'm very shy by nature, because that's an instruction from him, and because my husband is so gentle and kind, he honors that instruction. So I beg you to please set that voice aside for maybe 20 minutes, that other voice.
Also, that he gave her that instruction. You speak, you speak, you speak. And he told me, you chant, you chant, you chant.
So thank you very much. Thank you very much. So let me beg for the mercy. Okay, so the verse today we're reading is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4. And we're reading text 16, 17, and 18. Actually, text 16 does not have a purport, neither does 17. So we'll speak a little from 18. 16, okay. Satvam aham tvaktya karunyas tvaktya ganti surit kalaha kan lokan vaigamishyami brahma heva mritasvasan. Satva Prabhupada's translation, and there isn't a purport. Being merciful and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. Please repeat, being merciful and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. Om gana chinurandasya gana gana shalakaya chakshusha miltanena tasmai shri gurve namaha. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, so the translation again, being merciful and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after that or while breathing. And I'll just read the other translations. I'll just do the Sanskrit real quick and do the translations. Daivam apanuritam vatti namritya eva kevalam yadvisham badaham papa swashur nihatvam cheshum. Srila Prabhupada's translation, alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies. And I am so sinful that I believe the omen of providence and kill so many of my sister's children. And text 18. Masochatam mahabhagav atmajan swakritam buja yantavo nasadai katra daivarhinas tatarasati. Translation, O great souls, Your children have suffered their own misfortune. Therefore, please do not lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme, and they cannot always live together. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa addressed his sister and brother-in-law as Mahabhago, because although he killed their ordinary children, the goddess Durga took birth from them. Because Devaki bore Durga Devi in her womb, Kamsa praised both Devaki and her husband. Asuras are very devoted to the goddess Durga, Kali, and so forth. Kamsa, therefore, truly astonished, appreciated the exalted position of his sister and brother-in-law. Durga is certainly not under the laws of nature, because she herself is the controller of the laws of nature. Ordinary living beings, however, are controlled by these laws, Prakriti Kriyanamayi Guna Karmani Sarvashaha. Consequently, none of us are allowed to live together for any long period. By speaking in this way, Kamsa tried to pacify his sister and brother-in-law. So before I speak this verse, there's always a verse that has been important for me over the years to help me to get centered in trying to share something from the Srimad Bhagavatam or from any of the Vedic scriptures. And that verse is Tadviri Paripatena Paripashena Sevaya Upadeshanti Te Gyanam Gyaninastatva Darshinaha. And that verse, I learned that verse when I was a very new devotee. Actually, there's a nice story about that verse. I was being trained to distribute books. Now the book marathon is going on. And there was a devotee that washed all the clothes for the devotees that went out to distribute books. And we would come in the morning and give her our clothing, all our clothing, and then we would be gone and come back in the evening and all our clothing would be ready. And I was always intrigued by what inspires you to do this? How is it that you do this service every single day? And each day you're really enthusiastic and excited to serve the devotees like this. And she said to me, she said, well, actually, I'm enlivened and excited throughout the day because I have a secret. And I said, well, I want to know your secret. Because I was always very curious about how to stay enthusiastic in this devotional service. And so she said, I learn verses. That's what I do throughout the day. I said, really? You learn verses? Very interesting. Because at that time, going to distribute books, this was in 1980, we weren't learning verses, we were just going out distributing books. I thought, wow, this is incredible. This Mataji is washing the clothing. She's getting this amazing opportunity to learn verses. So then she said, and I have a verse for you. I was like, oh, wonderful. So she gave me this paper, and on the paper was this verse, Tadvidi Paripashena, Paripashena Sevaya. And at the time, I was not yet initiated. However, when I became initiated later that year, that verse got imprinted in my heart because I could understand that I personally do not understand anything about Krishna consciousness, nothing. And it is only the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and my spiritual master that I can sit here and say anything about anything regarding the Vedic scriptures. So this verse the verse lives with me. It's personalized in my consciousness. It's a person. The verse is a person. Because I understand absolutely that it is only the mercy of my spiritual master. And so in that mood, I will attempt to share some things by the mercy of my spiritual master. So this verse for me, these verses, they're really important because as I looked at it a little bit before we came down, I was thinking about Kamsa, and I've heard many classes since we've been here. We've been here a few days, and devotees here give amazing, wonderful, insightful, encouraging, caring, loving classes. And during the few days that I've had a chance to hear, I was able to hear about some of these amazing nuances about Kamsa and how every devotee gave a different perspective about Kamsa and how Kamsa relates to the world and how Kamsa, you know, represents so many different things that are going on in demoniac society and so many different ways we've heard about Kamsa. But something that's interesting for me about this pastime is we can approach this pastime from a place of Leela, where we know this is all going on by Krishna's arrangement. Or we can look at this pastime from what's going on in the world today, because we understand that Kamsa represents what's happening in demoniac society today. So we see in this verse, and for me, because my role is a therapist, I'm a therapist by profession, so I always scrutinizingly look in Srila Prabhupada's purport through the eyes, somewhat, of a therapist and the world and people that have so many different challenges in life. And so as I looked at this verse, I was thinking about Kamsa being this personality that's being used to help all of us today. And when we think of this Kamsa personality in my work, this personality would be referred to as like a psychopath, you know? In the world of psychology, he's like, this is somebody that's more than just weird or crazy. This is somebody that has some real mental imbalances, really, like, this word is a big psychopath. When you get people that are like psychopaths, you know, wow, what can really help them? You might just pump them with drugs, you know, to just let them kind of stay totally more in illusion. Or if someone is very fortunate, they can meet a devotee and get some mercy from a devotee, which all of you are doing, you know, during this marathon, is bringing this mercy out to so many people that are suffering so much in the world. So this mentality of Kamsa, here he's now taking a little bit of a turn. He has this psychopathic mentality, but at the same time, psychopaths, there's something very amazing about them. There's one moment when their mind takes them to a place where they can kill their parents. This is in this world that we're living in. There are many, especially the young generation today in the world, because the young people today, if they're not given proper spiritual nourishment, these young people are so much conditioned by this mood of achievement. They want to achieve. And they're looking to achieve materially, and they will do anything to achieve. So we've had several situations in America, and I'm sure this will be starting in India, where we have had young people just simply commit suicide. They just kill themselves because they cannot come up to the level of the achievement standard that's required in our society. And so we understand that this suffering that's going on inside the jiva, inside the living entity, is something that requires only transcendental knowledge, only knowledge that can go beyond what the mind does in people. So here, Kamsa is come to this place where, as I was saying, a psychopath, they will come to a place where they seemingly have so much understanding and so much sensitivity and so much caring. They will switch. They have like multiple personalities, like schizoid, you know, we use that word. Someone is schizoid, one minute they're like, Haribol Prabhu, how are you? Are you okay? Everything okay? So very okay. And the next minute they're like, become this other personality, and you're wondering, is this the same person? What happened? Is there some physical imbalance? Is there some chemical imbalance? What's going on with this person? So Kamsa, he was exemplifying for us the most amazing imbalance that we can see in the material world. If we use the word worst, which I don't so much like, but anyway, if we say good, better, worse, in terms of demoniac mentality, Kamsa was exemplifying the worst of the demoniac mentalities. However, because he's schizoid, because he has this personality that can flip in and out, and because he's conditioned by material modes, by the modes of material nature, Gauranga Prabhu nicely spoke so amazingly about the modes of material nature from such an intellectual place, Gauranga Prabhu. Thank you very much. But I was also thinking how to put that into my therapist's mind. So the modes affect us in so many different ways. And so Kamsa, he's definitely affected. And so he's getting now to this part of his split personality where he's exhibiting sensitivity and like almost like care, and almost he actually will speak philosophy. He will speak philosophy to his sister. So this is quite an amazing example for us, because sometimes we see in our devotee communities where someone can sometimes flip, maybe not to the extent of Kamsa, but we can see that sometimes you can have this kind of split kind of personality where someone is being so rash and harsh and using hard words, and then the next minute they're like gentle as a lamb. And you know, we often wonder what's happening. So Kamsa, because he was really conditioned by fear and lack of faith, so fear is an emotion. It's a feeling that can make our minds become so disturbed, this fear. That fear can make us do the most kind, the worst kind of atrocities, as is mentioned here. I remember in America working with some young people, and there are young people that really kill their parents, even now in America, kill their parents. Because for whatever the reasons are, from the time they were little, the parents may have had a behavior that the child really did not appreciate. And then as the child grows older, and you know, the child would stuff the fact that they did not appreciate the behavior. And then as time went on and on and on, the child gets older and older. And then the child gets some autonomy, gets some feeling of being able to make some decisions or be outspoken. Then the child starts speaking out to the parents in a very harsh way. And then the parents, being parents, they're like, you're a child. How can you speak to me like this? However, the child mind is thinking, ever since I was 4 years old, you've been speaking to me harshly, and now I'm 16 or 17, and so now I can respond in a way that I want to respond. And we have actually had children that kill their parents. So this behavior, Kamsa, it's actually so applicable to our modern world, and it's really so applicable to our young people today. Because many of our young people are not able to express what's really going on inside of them. And so as a result of that, they have behaviors that we often do not understand. And so this takes a lot of really trying to reach out to knowing the needs, what the needs are of our young people today. So trying not to divert too much into the behavior of human beings, because this is, we are talking about transcendental knowledge, and Srila Prabhupada is so carefully guiding us to keep our consciousness fixed in understanding this mood, how not to have this mood, how do we not have this mood. So when I read this purport of 18, Srila Prabhupada, I had a question in my mind, and that question was that Kamsa, in this mood now of being sensitive and being a little bit more human, I will say, he then approached his sister and brother in a mood of glorifying them. Mahabhago, you are so great. You are self-realized. And he's really apologizing. Almost we'll see that he's begging forgiveness from his brother and sister, because he's thinking they are so great. Because something that has struck him with wonder, struck him with astonishment, is bigger than him. And he's totally bewildered. How is it that this voice can come out of the sky? This is definitely something much bigger than who I am. And of course, because we understand from the Vedic scriptures that in those times, Durga was very worshipful, as was Lord Shiva and so many of the demigods. So he was astonished. He was struck with wonder, struck like, what is this? Just imagine we're in this room and all of a sudden, you know, we hear a voice from the sky, even though we have transcendental knowledge. I think some of us might still be, I know I would be, whoa, what's that? Where is that coming from? Who's that? So Kamsa, he was struck, he was bewildered, astonished, almost like frightened. He was afraid. Devaki and Vasudeva, who are they? Who are they? Who are these two people, these persons that have been doing all these horrible, horrible acts, this behavior that I've had? What is this that I've been doing? So he becomes humbled. And now he's wondering, what is going on here? There's something going on that I don't understand. And I better, as in America we say, get it together. I better get it together. This is beyond my own understanding. And so at that time, this question came for me, that how is it that Kamsa, he did not, he was humbled, but how is it that Durga came at that time and Kamsa could get some little, could speak in some little bit of an enlightened way, some little bit of an enlightened way, that he could understand that now there's something greater than me, there's something beyond me. So we have here now where I'm wondering, okay, Krishna, this is definitely, now we're seeing that there's a turn. We see who Krishna is. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everything goes on by Krishna's order. Everything is going on by Krishna's arrangement. So Durga Devi is arranged by Krishna. We all know the pastime. I don't need to go into the pastime. We all know that Krishna, he makes all these arrangements for so many things to happen so that the demonic personalities can be destroyed in the world. And so, of course, there's a plan to kill Kamsa. And Narada Muni, being who he is, Narada Muni goes and gives this information to Kamsa, and he incites things, as we know. And he's very insightful, as we know Narada Muni. He's very benedicted. Some managers know that kind of benediction. We kind of know how to, you know, incite things. So Narada Muni, he does like that, and he kind of get people to start thinking. And so he got Kamsa fearful and frightened, but we know there's a plan of Krishna. So at this point, Kamsa gives a little bit of understanding of there is something greater. And here we can see that now Krishna is, we're seeing how Krishna has empowered Mother Devaki to have this child, to bring this child, Durga Devi, that will actually make Kamsa get to a place at this point in the story, at this point in the pastime, where he will now take a humble position. And so this is the personality of Godhead. This is the Krishna that we worship. The Krishna that we worship is so great, is so amazingly wonderful, is so amazingly nourishing, is so amazingly caring, that he arranges all his associates and representatives to come and enact different kinds of pastimes to help us for one reason. One reason, that we do not develop these types of demoniac qualities. And how do we not do that? If we remember just simple Bhagavad Gita 101, we are not this body. This entire section of this pastime is to help us to get grounded, help us to get the foundation that we are not this body. Simple statements. However, this takes lifetimes to realize. And this can only be realized, again, through this verse. Tadviri paripatena paripashena sevaya upadre shantite gyanam gyananas tatvadarshinaha. And in that mood, we would like to now say some glorification in Srila Radhanath Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Hari Bhava. So just like in the verse, Rajalila pointed out that Kamsa represented so many different anarthas, and Srila Prabhupada explains that he represents material fear, and Devaki, she represents bhakti. And on this particular day, December 7th, a few weeks ago, there was a Vyasa Puja celebration for His Holiness Srila Radhanath Swami. And we spoke about how on December 7th, 1941, there was what was considered to be the Day of Infamy, where a attack was engaged, attack was made on America, American soil. And this particular incident was used to initiate a war in which many people were not in support of. And so similarly, throughout the entire history of the world, there's so many times in which material fear is actually used to engage people in some things that they do not desire to do. It's constantly going on. It continues to go on. However, Just as in our verse, we see that Kamsa represented fear, material fear, and Devaki represented bhakti. The Lord always sends a messenger, sends a way that people can understand that the only way that we can overcome this material fear is, as Rajalila pointed out, is to understand transcendence, to understand that we are not the material body. And so on this particular day, it's a glorious day because Srila Radhana Swami also appeared. And he represents bhakti. In 1980, Vrajalila actually had the, great fortune to actually meet His Holiness Radhana Swami. And she would share some of those things that transpired during that time. However, later, in 1989 and 1990 is when I actually met His Holiness. And I remember that every time he would come to see us in Washington, D.C., we really cherished to have his association. And I acted as his driver on many of those occasions when he came to Washington, D.C. And I just remember that there was just personality that, and it reminded me of a particular pastime where someone in the South in America, when they saw Srila Prabhupada, and it was a person that was very simple and was not very articulate. And he looked and he saw Srila Prabhupada and he was astonished. He saw him. He said, "Look, look, 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 that man, he's shining. Look, that man, he's shining. Look, that man, he's shining." And what he was saying was that this man had a glorious effulgence. And he was shining like things glow. And this was the experience that this very simple person had of Srila Prabhupada. And so I had a similar experience when I first saw Srila Radhana Swami. There was just this glowing effulgence that emanated from this person. And I wanted to actually find out more about this personality and get his association. And he was always so loving and caring. Each time when we would pick him up from the train station, I also noticed that he would just have mostly the clothes on his back, and then he'd have a little bag that he'd pull behind him. And some occasions when we have guests, we would have multiple bags, huge bags that we'd have to carry. And I'd ask Maharaj, I said, "Maharaj, can I help you?" He's like, "There's not much to do. I can pull this myself." And so he was so simple, so wonderful, and so simple. And he was always an integral part in both of our lives. When I took first initiation from His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami, His Holiness Radhana Swami was present there. And he spoke to us before the initiation and during the initiation and afterwards. A few years later, he didn't come. 2 years later, I took second initiation, addiction. And His Holiness Radhana Swami came. He was present, and he spoke to us before, after, and during. And then another year, Rajalila and I were actually married, and His Holiness Radhana Swami came. And so during each of the turning points, major points in both of our lives, he was present. During the time that His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami was departing, we reached a point where we were having so many challenges. It was very difficult, especially for me. I spent probably in the area of 12 to 16 hours a day with His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami. And Vrajalila would come in between and offer a service. She had to cook for him, and she would sit down and they would engage in dialogue. And then after they finished, I would sit and engage in the dialogue like a fly on the wall. I felt like one of the sages Namasharanga. You had the dialogue going on, and here I was listening. But it was most memorable. And at this point in time, we were having quite a challenge. And we both prayed, you know, to get some assistance. We were asking for other devotees to come and help us. And I remember that evening, His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, he was having some major health crisis. And so he went and took rest. And finally, I came downstairs and we talked. And during the time we were having our conversation, the phone rang. And we answered the phone. And he said, Hare Krishna. And he said, Rajalila Ekavira Prabhu, this is Radhanath Swami. How are you? And we said, oh my, Maharaj, it's just amazing that you would call at this particular time. And Rajalila and I, we asked him so many different questions. We were just so grateful at this turning point. He was there to assist us in our service to our spiritual master. And then again, a few months later, when we were in Gitanagari, Maharaj, His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami, was reaching another change, another turning point. And we were expressing to him and said, we need some assistance. We really need some assistance. And during that time, there were the GVC meetings going on in New Vrindavan. And we got a call, and they said that today there will be a group of devotees that will come with His Holiness Radhanath Swami to see Bhaktitirtha Swami. And so we welcomed him, and he came. We had a wonderful class. They both spoke. And afterwards, Radhanath Maharaj asked Bhaktitirtha Swami, said, is there any seva that I can do for you, Maharaj? He said, well, you're so busy. I know there's so many people in the world that are waiting for you, and they appreciate your association just as I do. However, if you would like, I would like you to stay here with me and assist me. I'm going to be departing, maybe in a few days, but I would really like you to stay with me, if you would like. And Radhanath Swami looked at him in his eyes, and they both had tears in their eyes. And he said, I'm your servant, whatever you would like, I'm at your service. And so he stayed. And he said, well, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj said that he would depart in a couple of days. Little did I know, later he expressed, little did I know that it would be 6 or 7 weeks before Maharaj actually departed. However, this was a very special time in our lives again. And I'll let Rajalila express some of the things that she experienced. But another thing that I'll share before she speaks is that after the departure of His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami, Rajalila was sharing with Radhanath Maharaj that, you know, in 1980, Bhaktitirtha Swami, he was not taking disciples. However, I was under his shelter. And he sent me to New Vrindavan to be initiated. And at that time, I was initiated by Kirtanananda Maharaj. But you performed the yajna. You were the priest. And he said, really? She said, yes. That was in 1980. He said, really? 1980? That's interesting, because during that period of time, not only was I doing the yajnas, I was also giving the names of the devotees who were taking initiation. She said, oh my. He said, yeah, I gave you your name. So it was much to our surprise, but at the same time, we're grateful again, and it was not by accident that he was there at that point in time, because he had always been in our lives at any turning point, major turning point in our lives.
Thank you. So as Ekavira Prabhu said, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, at that time in 1980, he was a sannyasi and he wasn't yet a guru. He became a guru in 1986, so he wasn't actually able to take disciples. However, when I was brought to Krishna consciousness, I was offered to him by the person that brought me, to His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami. So that's the person that I knew from my first day, my first time of being in Krishna consciousness, until he closed his eyes for the last time. So it was a relationship of guru-disciple that was... It had a lot of... how can I explain this? It's guru-disciple, those devotees that have been disciples for a long time. Long means not really long when we think of time. However, over 20 years serving the spiritual master, the relationship becomes one definitely of servitude, and at the same time there is deep caring. The spiritual master becomes very caring about the disciples, always, always. But those devotees that stay around for some time, the spiritual master shows a different part of himself. And so somehow we were very fortunate to be able to have that kind of association with our spiritual master. And I was very fortunate to simultaneously have that kind of association with His Holiness Radhanath Swami. Because as Ekavira Prabhu said, when I got initiated, he did the yajna, he was the officiating priest. And right after my initiation, Kirtananda Maharaj at the time said, okay, now you go back to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he will take care of you. So I just sat in the fire, Maharaj did my yajna, and then I got my name, and at the time I thought, this is really odd. I never heard this name in New Vrindavan. It's a different name. I remember that. It's a different name. This is like kind of a... At that time, I didn't know much about anything. I still don't. But Leela, but Fragile Leela, I was like, oh, this is something like a different name. I could tell that. But I didn't know. I really didn't have any clue that Radhanath Swami had given my name until, like I said, just recently, a few years ago. So how has Maharaj been an integral part of my spiritual growth in this lifetime? One is he's been the best friend that I have seen of my spiritual master. I have been with my spiritual master a lot, and I always have heard Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj speak about His Holiness Radhanath Swami in such a loving and caring way. So one of the things that when I became a devotee, my Guru Maharaj immediately sent me to Africa, which is sent me at the end of 1980, actually. I went to Africa and stayed there for 10 years, pioneering temples with Brahmananda, at the time Swami. However, I would come back every year to distribute books and to collect Lakshmi to take care of the temples in Africa. And whenever I would come back, I would go to New Vrindavan, where His Holiness Radhanath Swami lived. And I would join the party there, the Sankirtan party. However, a lot of the time, I would get opportunities to meet and see Radhanath Maharaj. And that was absolutely the joy of a devotee's spiritual life, is to go to New Vrindavan and to be able to see Radhanath Swami. Because Radhanath Swami was like, he would glide, you know? You see him coming and you just see like this something coming from down the hill, and you see the orange cloth, and he would be like somebody not from this world. Actually, Radhanath Maharaj is not from this world. But at that time, we just knew, he's coming. He's coming, Maharaj is coming, you know? And we would wait, and he was just such the most amazing, gentle, just gliding personality. And by the time he got to you, you know, you were just like finished. Because he would just give his pranam and a smile. Hari Bol, how are you? And every problem of Africa went away. You know, I remember thinking, when I see Maharaj, I'm going to tell him all these things about, you know, this kind of this preaching. And you see him, and it was just like, okay, forget it. Forget it. And so those were some of the early days. We would go to New Vrindavan every year. We would go for festivals. Maharaj would be there. We would look for him. We would, You know, it was just, he was the foundation, actually, of New Vrindavan. And he was the foundation of the devotees that were in New Vrindavan. The loving foundation, devotees that were looking to get some caring reciprocation. This is what Radhanath Maharaj gave. This is what I've always known, how I've always known him. He would make everything okay without speaking. He didn't have to speak to make it okay. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was traveling a lot, and so somehow, whenever he was traveling, I would be able to go to New Vrindavan and get the association of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj at the time, Ladini Mataji, and another sannyasi at the time. There's three of them that were like the spiritual foundation, like you have your foundations here, where they were like that. And so whenever Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj would come back from traveling, somehow him and Radhanath Maharaj would arrange it. I don't know how, but Maharaj would know when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was back from whatever the travels were, and Maharaj would come to Washington, D.C. At that time, we were living in Washington, D.C. There's so many stories connected with Srila Radhanath Maharaj. But really quickly, we were asked to open a preaching center under the direction of Kirtananda Maharaj at that time in Washington, D.C., in one of the most affluent and opulent areas of Washington, D.C. And I remember being so torn. How we get, I'm in Africa, now leave Africa, come back, now open preaching center. And, you know, I always go to Radhanath Swami, Maharaj, you know, this being in with different authorities, how does that, how does it work? How to do this? And he was always so kind with me. He was always carefully guiding me, directing me, helping me, always keeping me under the shelter of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, always finding ways to move me and keep me in that shelter. So we opened this preaching center, and Maharaj would come, and he would, every time we opened a center in Washington, D.C., Maharaj would come. And he would spend some time with us, and he would give classes, and I would get a chance to cook for him. And but most importantly, what Radhanath Maharaj offered at that time, not just to me or to Ekavira Prabhu, but he offered sanity, spiritual sanity. You know, there is kind of like a little bit of sometimes spiritual insanity in our society, or, you know, sometimes we create that ourselves. But he was always one to make things very sane and very simple and very approachable. He was always approachable. I could always go to him and ask him anything in the sun. Even now, I still do. Even now, I go to Maharaj with anything. Maharaj, this is something I really need to get some clarity on. And Maharaj is always there, giving the best of information, or the best of clarity, clarifying things so that I can go on in my spiritual life. And so one of the ways I thought to glorify Radhanath Swami, other than just speaking about my own personal experiences with him, which I love to do, however, I think it's more important in the devotee community, where now you are speaking, so much is going on about Bhagavad Gita, is to share with you how Radhanath Maharaj manifests for me from the Bhagavad Gita. And so we did this really quickly, but hopefully we can get something from this. So in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna starts speaking about who is dear to him. And he gives all these qualities of devotees that are dear to Krishna, right? And so we can always look through the Bhagavad Gita to understand where we are in our spiritual life and the people that are guiding us, where they are in their spiritual life. And it's because Krishna clearly tells us everything, as he told Arjuna. We ourselves were getting this information. So I just briefly, quickly, we wrote some of the qualities. One of the qualities that is very predominant for me in my consciousness about His Holiness Radhanath Swami. Radhanath Swami is non-envious. All of us, I'm sure, have seen Maharaj in many different situations where all kinds of people may challenge him in so many different ways. But Maharaj has this amazingly soft, caring heart. And no matter what's going on, he always sees the bright and wonderful side of things. He's never someone to ever speak in a way that will make someone, will not build someone up. He will never bring someone down to their lowest denominator. It's just not his nature. It's just not a part of him. And so he's non-envious. I remember at the time when my Guru Maharaj and him also, they similar kinds of things happened in their lives. And there was a time when they were estranged from ISKCON for their both their different reasons. And we went through this period with them, with both. And I remember at that time, Maharaj, they would speak about these things that were going on, but never in a way of being envious or disturbed in terms of what was happening, but always in a way of accepting, this is arranged by Krishna, this is somehow an opportunity for me to grow and to do something else and to expand in my own consciousness. And he always thought like that. This was the example that I've seen. And so what I do in my practice even is I use these examples and I use how I've seen people exemplify these examples for me to help others. So non-envious means that we're always conscious of building someone up. We're always assisting someone to know the greatness within them. Greatness not in ego, but greatness in that we are servants of Krishna. We are part and parcels of the Lord. And we all are gifted with something to give. And so even me sitting in class right now, this is not really something that you do in Chaupati. I mean, Prabhupada disciples are able to do that. I'm not a Prabhupada disciple. But by Maharaj's kindness, by Maharaj's mood of not being envious, he's somehow training all of you to try to appreciate something in everyone. And so for that, I'm grateful to all of you, because I can see how well you are learning this quality from Maharaj. I won't go, there's so many qualities, but I just wanted to talk about a few. Maharaj is like, we say that he's a friend to all living entities. He's a friend to everyone, no matter where he goes. People love His Holiness Radhanath Swami, that they don't know anything about Krishna consciousness. They just see this person and his glide, and that's his glide, and his smile, and his care, his simple, how are you? It's like a bullet straight to the heart. And so anyone that meets him and gets that, they get it. They get it. They go away thinking, who is that person? And they remember that. I've had people ask me years after they met him, who is he? When is he coming again? Is he going to come? And like this, these are some of the qualities that I remember that is Maharaj. Maharaj is, he does not put anyone into difficulty. You know, I'm sure as a spiritual master that he must have different ways that he nurtures his disciples, and that they're sometimes guru means heavy, sometimes guru is heavy, but never that he's putting someone into difficulty. I am sure that Maharaj sees where everyone is, and he simply tries to nurture that. He simply tries to help the devotees, those that are going to become brahmacharis, those that are going to become sannyasis, those that are going to be spokesperson for our movement, whatever. He sees the quality in everyone, and he nurtures it. So in this way, he's not putting someone into difficulty. He's not making someone a householder if they're going to be a brahmachari. He's not making someone a brahmachari if they're going to be a householder. He's not letting someone be a sannyasi if they're going to be, you know, a brahmachari. And I'm sorry, I'm going up and down. Not that I mean like that. But like that, he sees the soul. He sees us, who we are. He knows what we are capable of. He understands it, and he nurtures that. He nurtures that. He helps us in that way. Something that I saw with Maharaj that came through was, you know, as Ekavir Prabhu says, the last major time we spent with him was with our spiritual master, major quality time, days and days together, he being the chief of the caretakers. And something we learned from him at that time is he neither rejoices nor grieves. He was sad, but not to the point where he wasn't functioning and always helping us to see Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's hand in what was going on with our spiritual master. Even one time I remember a little bit questioning Maharaj, because I was thinking how difficult it was for my Guru Maharaj to make the transition out of the physical body in one sense, because dying is not easy. It's not easy. Make no mistake about dying. It is not easy. And so in that process, I was wanting to share with Maharaj that, well, he's experiencing this and he's experiencing that. And, you know, he wants to eat pizza, but he shouldn't be eating pizza. And like this, I would try to share with Maharaj. And Maharaj would always keep me on the highest level of seeing things, you know. And I was thinking, Maharaj, but there are some things he's going through, you know. And Maharaj would always be like reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, sharing things from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, reading the pastimes, always, always, always making sure that we stay in that realm of understanding transcendental knowledge and how it relates to the process of dying. Even when my mind wanted to see the physical things that might have been going on, he was very careful, very conscious, very conscientious about that. And so later, I appreciated. At the time, I didn't really appreciate, because I was like, but physically this is happening, but emotionally this is happening. And he would listen to me, and then he would say something really transcendental, and I'd be like, I didn't want to hear that. I wanted to talk about what's going on emotionally, what's going on physically. But he neither rejoices nor grieves. This is how he stayed fixed. He stayed equipoised, understanding. I'm here as a servant. I'm here to help my godbrother. And Krishna has made this arrangement for both of them and also us, the other caretakers. He wanted to be sure that we were staying spiritually sound. And so for that, I can say that if Maharaj was not in my life or in our life, the disappearance of the spiritual master is the most devastating thing. And perhaps, I don't know what may have happened, but I'm sure because my spiritual master trained me in so many ways that I would have certainly come back to my natural understanding of Krishna consciousness. But for some time, it's like a daze. And I remember Maharaj asking me, what are you going to do now? I'd served my spiritual master for 30 years. 30 years. I never knew anyone else except him, Radhanath Swami, a few other personalities. He said, what are you going to do? And I said, Maharaj, I'm going to India. I'm going to study Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what I'm going to do. And he looked at me and that's what, by Krishna's grace, my Guru Maharaj's grace, I was able to go and just do that, just get immersed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and study. Because somehow Maharaj kept us like that. He kept us focused. He kept us focused. And the only desire I had after my Guru Maharaj left was that I needed to hear more about Krishna. That was it. I needed to hear more about Krishna. And I could not, although I was lamenting, I couldn't stay in that lamenting process because, materially speaking, that process can actually even make someone commit suicide. That's usually what happens when people commit suicide. They lament so much with their own troubles. So Maharaj is teaching us by example. He's fixed in knowledge. He doesn't find fault. He's truthful. He's gentle. He's steady in his determination. He's self-controlled. He renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things. He's not the proprietor. You see, I saw yesterday, he's sleeping on the floor. His back is out. You know, he just takes what Krishna gives. And I know this is not a very comfortable in terms of how I think. I'm thinking, first thing we always ask, Maharaj, how is your health? How are you? And of course, you know, he's always seeing things from a different perspective. At the same time, we understand physically this is not the most comfortable situation for Maharaj. And we worry because we know that the body does need some care. So he is just not a proprietor. He doesn't think I need to control that, okay, here we have this huge temple and I have all these devotees and therefore I should have the nice room and nice bed and nice situation and I'm in control of all of this and therefore let me get nice things from it. No, he has nothing. He sleeps on a mat. And like this. He's caring for everyone. Most importantly, the qualification or the quality of Maharaj that pierces all of our hearts and that all of us are praying to be examples of this for everyone we meet is that Maharaj makes Krishna, Srimati Radharani, the main center of his life. Supreme Personality of Godhead is the focus of his life. By Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we see that he has understood this purport. And we can test it. We can test it from the Bhagavad Gita. We don't have to speculate. We still have the personality around to see and to learn. And so my simple request from all of you is please don't minimize in any way this amazing association of this personality that you are receiving. Please take every moment, every class. You can take a class and you can go through that class for the whole day. You can take one purport of his, of the writings, of his classes, of his sharing, and you can meditate on that for the whole day. So today, being Maharaj's Appearance Day, please go through the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Find one of those qualities that resonates for you, that Maharaj has exemplified for you in your life. Meditate on that quality today. And if you get a chance, write him a letter of gratitude for that quality. Because what can we say? A spiritual master, Shri Radha Gopinath, we don't know what Krishna has planned. We don't know. So let's all please take advantage of today and make it a Krishna conscious day for Maharaj, each and every one of us. Yes. Thank you. I get the clue.
As Rajalila has so wonderfully expressed, some, just a glimpse. We see, like in the ocean, we might see an iceberg and we see the tip, but there's so much underneath. And she just gave just a little tip of some of the wonderful qualities that His Holiness Srila Ramnath Swami actually exemplifies. And I just wanted to share one particular pastime with the devotees, because this, all of these qualities are there because of this desire and also the way that Maharaj actually sees himself. And this was during the time when, after the departure of His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami. And Srila Ramnath Swami was not doing well physically. And for some weeks, he was not physically strong. But each and every day, he would come and make himself available to Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami. He would make himself available to all of those who were serving. He would make himself available to all the guests who were coming and speaking with him. So after Bhaktivedanta Maharaj's departure, his body just collapsed. His blood pressure dropped significantly. And we were really concerned about Maharaj. And mostly he was really saddened by the departure of his dear friend. And I remember having this conversation with him. Maharaj, we really appreciate all that you have done and all that you continue to do. You always see yourself in such a way that's so simple, and it touches the heart of each and every person that you come in contact with. And he said, I really don't know what I do. I never was a confident person. I was always simple. The only thing that I know is that I really, really love the devotees, and I try to serve them. That's the only thing that I know that I have. And I just try to share that. And so all of these wonderful qualities manifest because he really sees himself as a servant of the servant, of the servant of the devotees. And so therefore, we are most grateful to have his association. We're most grateful for his example. And we thank Krishna for his divine graces, appearance. His Holiness Srila Radhana Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki. Nitai Gol Premanande. Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Thank you very much, devotees. Thank you.